It is Friday, November 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the presidents of the United States and China offer vastly different paths to Asian business leaders. Tensions grow between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And country music stars pay tribute to their colleagues and fans who've passed away. It's all ahead. The leaders of the United States and China offer differing views of the direction for trade in Asia in separate speeches to regional business leaders on Friday. U.S. President Donald Trump told the APEC CEO summit that he's willing to make bilateral trade agreements with any country in the Indo-Pacific region, but he rejected multinational deals such as the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership. I spoke with VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman, who's traveling with the president in Da Nang, Vietnam.
One of the first things that Donald Trump did when he became president was to pull the United States out of that 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership. And there are 11 other countries that are trying to salvage it. In fact, right now, there are negotiations going on, and the Japanese Prime Minister just told reporters that they have a deal except for Canada. So that is going on. But on the other hand, President Trump very clearly said today that he would do a bilateral trade agreement with any nation in the region that wants to be a partner of the United States, as long as they're willing to abide by what he calls the principles of fair and reciprocal trade.
Now, he's spoken a lot recently about Indo-Pacific nations. Why has his administration been using this term?
Right. I think we're used to hearing Asia-Pacific. In fact, APEC, the A and the P, is Asia-Pacific. And this is looking to expand the concept of a region in terms of security and economy to include India, essentially. The United States very much wants to have India playing a much larger role in the region to counter China. Now, a lot of people will say with the TPP, that's exactly what you had without India, but with all these other very significant nations in the region, and that the TPP primarily, if not anything else, was strategically a bulwark against a rising China.
Well, meanwhile, however, Chinese President Xi Jinping, he spoke about how he backs the multilateral concept. I mean, could this be possibly setting up the U.S. and China for further disagreements down the road?
Sure. Xi Jinping was sounding very much like some of the previous American presidents who have addressed trade organizations in this region, talking about a level playing field and really expanding trade and doing this through the multilateral concept. And China, of course, was left out of the TPP. And Xi Jinping said that globalization is irreversible and that the world has to work to make it more balanced and inclusive. Now, the big question is, it does appear that the United States and China in trade and other issues are clearly on divergent paths. And whether this will lead to clashes in the future, or these two countries, which are number one and number two in the world, both in terms of economies and militaries, will learn to coexist peacefully.
Well, meanwhile, there have been rumors floating around that President Trump might be meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. What is the latest on that?
Well, both countries had been dancing around this for days. The Russians had been insistent that there would be a meeting one way or another. Putin and Trump would meet here in Vietnam. The U.S. had earlier said that it wanted something substantive if there were to be talks. And earlier today, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary as Air Force One was coming into Da Nang, said there would not be a meeting. Well, I guess you can say that both sides can call it the way that they see it, because what has happened at the summit dinner this evening, both Trump and Putin were standing next to each other. They smiled for the traditional group photograph, and they actually exchanged some words, according to Russian media. shook hands, again, according to the Russian accounts, and that's about all we know about it. Will there be something more substantive during the formal main meeting on Saturday, where the two will go to the sidelines and chat for a longer period of time? We don't know, but the Russians, at least at this point, can say that what they said was true, that these two, one way or another, would be talking to each other. And the White House can say, look, we told you there wasn't going to be a meeting, and there wasn't a meeting.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Da Nang, Vietnam. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, today in the United States is Veterans Day, so hashtag Veterans Day is trending across social media as people celebrate the men and women who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces. One thing that I've seen a lot of, in addition to people just saying thank you to our veterans, a lot of young people on social media sharing stories and photos about their parents, grandparents, even great-grandparents who have served, some of them serving in the Korean War, World War II, serving in combat, and talking about how proud they are of them that they've served. So that's a very nice touch that a lot of different people are celebrating and connecting a lot of young people who maybe haven't served or don't know anyone who has served. They're connecting them to them. We're also looking at a lot of people honoring more recent veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, celebrating not only their service, but talking about the need to focus on their health when they've returned home, preventing issues like post-traumatic stress disorder and suicide prevention. So they said, even though these people have gone and served and we should thank them for that, we should continue to support and help them as they come back. So a lot of talk about Veterans Day today, and a lot of talk about a new program from Facebook called Community Boost. Now, this is a program where Facebook is going to visit 30 different U.S. cities in 2018 to train people how to use social media. They're going to teach workers social media skills so they can stay competitive in the job market, teaching businesses how to use social media to find new customers, and teaching first-time internet users kind of the ins and outs of being online, online safety, how to keep yourself safe but enjoy social media. Lots of praise for the program, some criticism that it's focused primarily on Facebook, but of course they are the ones funding it, so it's going to be their social network. And some questions about Mark Zuckerberg's political intentions. Some people have talked about him maybe wanting to run for office. They said this kind of program would be a great way to go around the country and tour around, so we'll have to see.
All right, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Japan will send its largest warship to a U.S. military exercise near the Korean Peninsula. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the U.S. opposes action causing instability in Lebanon. The U.S. will ban illicit versions of a synthetic opioid. And a member of Britain's House of Lords says reconciliation with the EU is still possible. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the science journal Nature outlines the discovery of what is being described as a star that will not die. An international group of astronomers has been observing a star they say has survived multiple explosions or supernovas for more than 50 years. The supernova was discovered in 2014. At the time, astronomers say it behaved like a normal supernova, which brightens and then fades away in about 100 days. But several months later, the astronomers noticed this supernova was again growing brighter after it had faded. Over a two-year period, they found that the supernova grew brighter and dimmer at least five times. Then the astronomers looked up archival data that indicated a star explosion back in 1954 in the same location. This star somehow survived that explosion and exploded again in 2014. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we meet NASA's longest-serving female employee. The United States has accused Iran of supplying Houthi rebels in Yemen with a missile that was fired towards Saudi Arabia in July. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has accused Iran of direct military aggression in the firing of another missile toward the King Khaled International Airport last Saturday. The missile was intercepted by Saudi air defenses. The White House this week condemned the missile attacks, saying they were enabled by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, adding they threaten regional security and undermine UN efforts to negotiate and end the conflict. University of Denver International Affairs Professor Jonathan Adelman tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, the Saudi Crown Prince's ambitious domestic and foreign policy agenda appears to include tensions with Iran.
What would be the best possible way to unite the country under him? To have an enemy like Iran, because Iran is the leader of the Shiites and Saudi Arabia is the leader of the Sunnis. And also because Iran is concerned about the fact that the United States is getting much more involved. You listen to the rhetoric from the White House, that means the Iranians need some support against the United States, and so he would turn naturally to Moscow. I think some of it could be deadly serious, maybe even more so than what's going on with North Korea.
You take the missile attack that came from Yemen, Saudi Arabia seeming to be involved somehow in the Lebanese political crisis that we have with the resignation of the prime minister. Crown Prince Mohammed is strengthening his own power at home. Taking all together, what's going on?
I think we're seeing nothing less than a reordering of the way things are done in the Middle East. Number one, the United States used to be the unquestioned dominant power in the Middle East. That's not clear anymore. The Russians were out of the Middle East. And thirdly, Iran in the 1980s, as you'll remember, got into a very long war that lasted almost the entire decade against their neighbors, Iraq. Now, all of a sudden, what's happening is, with the perception that the United States is not as involved as it has been before, the Saudis, under the Crown Prince, is aligning himself strongly with the United States and also with the Israelis. There was talk that the Crown Prince visited Israel 2 weeks ago. It was denied officially, but the unofficials were no. But that would illustrate something very powerful, that there's a real realignment going on. And the Russians are now aligning themselves with, of all people, the Turks and the Iranians. These are two people that over the centuries, the Russian Empire fought literally a dozen wars against the Turks, and they fought four wars in the 19th and 20th century against the Iranians. So I think we're seeing nothing less than a potential reordering of the way everyone is lined up in the Middle East.
University of Denver International Affairs Professor Jonathan Adelman. The longest-serving woman in the U.S. space agency, NASA, has been with the agency since it was created in 1958. Mike O'Sullivan spoke with 80-year-old Sue Finley at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, where she works on NASA's Deep Space Network, providing communications for interplanetary missions.
Finley started her work here as a human computer, one of the women mathematicians who computed trajectories by hand for early space missions. Their responsibilities shifted as computers became electronic.
Little tiny computers. One I had 16 wires, jumper cables that, to code with. One we had pegboards, 10 pegboards that you programmed with.
As modern computers took over navigation, Finley developed and tested software as a subsystem engineer. Among her career highlights, the Vega mission, a Soviet-French collaboration to Venus and Halley's Comet that received navigational help from NASA and dropped balloons into the atmosphere of Venus. She had to change the software for the antenna that tracked the mission.
And it worked. Everything worked. That's what's so exciting.
Finley has worked since 1980 on the Deep Space Network, which coordinates satellite facilities in California, Spain, and Australia that allow NASA to communicate with space probes. Her career highlights include developing software that generates audio tones that tell engineers on the ground what is happening in space, first used for Mars missions. Each tone has a meaning that communicates data, as Finley's colleague Stephen Lichten explains.
If a parachute opened, it would send a tone, and you could see that. The spacecraft lets go of its heat shield, it would send a different tone. And so engineers like Sue were here listening for these special frequencies which told them the spacecraft was telling them what it had just done.
Finley also helped develop communication arrays that combined multiple antennas to act in unison. Licton shared an office with Finley in his early days at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, and says she inspired young engineers like him.
There was a parade of people coming in constantly to ask her advice, ask her questions. This was during the Venus balloon mission days, and I realized that Sue was regarded as sort of a guru at JPL.
He says Finley has been involved with nearly every advance in space communication since the 1950s, and she continues her work today. There are many more women at NASA today than there were when Finley started, and she tells young women to be inquisitive.
I tell them to never be afraid to ask questions, never be afraid to say you don't know.
After nearly six decades at the agency, the mother of two grown sons and a mentor to her colleagues, Finley has no plans of retiring.
There's nothing else I want to do. And so far, they need me.
As they have since the early days of the space agency NASA. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. One of the biggest nights in country music happened this week, the Country Music Association Awards, otherwise known as the CMAs. Nikki Strong is here to tell who won what and more. Nikki, tell us about some of the highlights.
Okay, well, the opener, for starters, I call it a feel-good, hootified opener, because it started with a verse from Eric Church of Amazing Grace, and then it segued into the Darius Rucker led rendition of the Hootie and the Blowfish song, Hold My Hand. And it seemed like almost every artist in country music joined the stage. It's like they opened with a closing number.
Yeah.
So that was nice, and it really set the tone for like family and unity that was felt throughout the night. Co-hosts Carrie Underwood and Brad Paisley's country song parodies, which they do, are always great. And they did one that was directed to Trump. So Carrie Underwood has a song called Before He Cheats, and they called it Before He Tweets. It was cute. It was very cute. They never said his name, but everyone knew who they were talking about. It was done in good taste. It was fun. Other than that, some of the most memorable moments were when artists were paying tribute to those who passed away. Little Big Town did an exquisite rendition of Wichita Lineman by Glenn Campbell, so much so that I was like, can you release that single like today? It was beautiful what they did with it. And then there was a Troy Gentry tribute with Rascal Flatts and Dierks Bentley and Eddie Montgomery, and that was sweet. Brothers Osborne segued into the late Don Williams hit Tulsa Time, which had everybody in the audience singing with them in a couple of wet eyes. But hands down, the show-stopping highlight of the night was the In Memorandum segment with Carrie Underwood. People were holding candles. She was dressed in white. She just sang the Christian hymn softly and gently, and with a slideshow of those first who passed away in the industry. And then towards the end of the song, they showed pictures and the people's names of everyone who passed away in the Las Vegas mass shooting. It was elegant. It was raw. It was emotional. It was heartfelt. It was beautiful. It was very, very moving. And I think people are going to be talking about that tribute far beyond what happened last night. It was great. So I think it's going to be one of the greatest highlights in CMA award history.
Yeah, because we should mention those people that were killed, they were there for a country music
exactly.
concert. They were country fans.
Exactly. And that's what made it that much more family. It was like a, you know, they were integrated into the whole country music industry family. And that was the theme in for the night. It was beautifully done.
So who won what? Any big winners?
Well, one big winner was Taylor Swift, which I thought was hilarious. She wasn't there, though. She won for Song of the Year for writing Better Man. I love that song. It's performed by Little Big Town. So they, you know, accepted the award on her behalf. They also won for Vocal Group of the Year. Chris Stapleton won for Male Vocalist of the Year and Album of the Year for From a Room Volume 1. Brothers Osborne won for Vocal Duo of the Year. I think this is their second year in a row. And they won for Music Video of the Year for It Ain't My Fault. Single of the Year went to Keith Urban. For Blue Ain't Your Color. I thought it was going to go to Sam Hunt, maybe, but it went to Keith Urban, and I was like, yes, I wasn't mad. New Artist of the Year was John Party, and Female Vocalist of the Year was Miranda Lambert. Again, she won over Carrie Underwood, and even she's just like, I don't understand that. She has admitted. She's like, Carrie sings me under the table. And then the coveted Entertainer of the Year went to Garth Brooks for a second year in a row. And ironically, his performance that evening was a lip sync fail.
Oh, no!
He moved the mic away from his mouth while the track was playing.
Oh, no.
And, you know, social media caught it. But he basically said, you know, I wasn't feeling well. My voice wasn't up to par. So they decided to lip sync. But I think everybody has forgiven him. But I just thought it was ironic and hilarious. Other than that, the show, for the most part, was a good show.
Okay. Well, you can hear more music from all of the CMA nominees and winners on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
'Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues away.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
November 11th is Veterans Day in the United States, a day to remember those who served in this nation's armed forces and to honor the sacrifice of those who perished in the service of their country. The observance is not limited to the United States. Most countries that were involved in the First World War commemorate this day. That's because November 11th, 1918, marks the day on which an armistice signed by the Allied powers and Germany went into effect, ending the bloody conflict that was, at the time, called the War to End All Wars. This rosy sentiment notwithstanding, since the end of the First World War, not one single decade passed that was not shaped by a war, be it conflicts in Korea and Indochina, in South Asia or the Balkans, battles in North Africa and the Middle East, or the largest, bloodiest conflict of them all, the Second World War. American soldiers have fought and died side by side with our allies to defend our common homelands, our people, our ideals. Since the first volley of gunfire in the Revolution, brave Americans in every generation have answered the call of duty and won victory for freedom in its hour of need, said President Donald Trump. Today, a new generation of American patriots are fighting to win the battle against terrorism, risking their lives to protect our citizens from an enemy that uses the murder of innocents to wage war on humanity itself. Today, we remember those who stood up and defended not only America and its people, but those of other nations as well. Today, we honor the sacrifice of those men and women who fought and lost their lives across all wars on every continent. We can never replace them, said President Trump. We can never repay them. But we can always remember. And today, that is what we are doing. We remember.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.